This is the Trying Again podcast, a story of miscarriage. I'm Rachel Smith. This is a podcast of passion as I explore a usually silent world and decide whether I want to try again for a baby following multiple miscarriages. If you're here for the first time, you're very welcome. If you're curious, head back to episode 1 and listen through to get the full story to why I'm here talking about baby loss. This episode will explore ways of looking after our mental health following a miscarriage. The conversations that feature in the episode will be frank.
You need to be eating as well as you can. You need to be sleeping as well as you can. You need to be getting your 20 minutes exercise every single day. All the kind of basic stuff, tick, tick, tick.
And they may be difficult.
My last miscarriage was during lockdown, first lockdown. And following that, I had kind of just decided that's it, we really can't do this anymore.
But they are needed.
If you haven't really dealt with the core issues, you know, your anger, your frustrations of what's going on, then it's so easy to go round and round in a cycle or get stuck at one point.
I have touched on this topic throughout the podcast. It's important to me on a personal level through my own experiences of what I call wobbles. I have felt anxious at the thought of trying again. I've had negative emotions of jealousy and low self-worth. I've looked in the mirror and hated what I saw, hated my belly, hated my body. I've doubted whether I'm a good person because I cried at the sight of a newborn baby, even though that baby's mum and dad is someone I love. I think mental health care is an important area for discussion, and I am in no way qualified to discuss this alone, so I have looked around for some advice and support, which led me to Julia Bueno. Julia is a psychotherapist and counsellor who, amongst other areas, supports people coping with baby loss.
When my first pregnancy ended in a very late loss, I lost twins in my 22nd week of pregnancy. That experience was pretty shattering, as you can imagine, and changed me in many ways. And I went into my own personal therapy, but it was the sort of clincher, if you like, of making me realise that I did really want to go press ahead and retrain as a therapist and to specialise in that area. For the reasons that still, almost 20 years later, are common to many other women couples, that the grief and experience was so profound and so misunderstood and ill-supported that I became quite determined to do my best to support others.
And how have you found your steps have taken to cope with your losses?
It's not an easy answer to that one, because after I lost my first pregnancy, I then had my son, who was born very early, and that was a fairly kind of traumatic birth, and his entrance into the world was pretty traumatic. I then went on to have three more miscarriages over the course of another 5-6 years before having another pregnancy. So my process of recovery was sort of staggered each time. It was a case of, for me, of recovering from one loss and trying again. And so it was a long and drawn out experience for me, but the things that I think that I could say have helped me along the way have included personal therapy, which doesn't mean that I think everybody should be in personal therapy, but the nature of my first loss was so shocking and traumatic, I definitely needed that. And forging support amongst others who had trod similar paths, which 20 years ago was more difficult to do. I think, you know, the online world and the online support didn't really exist then. So finding your quote-unquote sort of tribe of support was more difficult, but that was really wonderful when that did happen. Actually, also my voluntary work and my work for Miscarriage Association, as a lot of, you know, I find a lot of people similarly find great source and strength in helping others and indeed campaigning and advocacy. That isn't for everybody, but I'm the sort of person who found that a sort of there was something healing in going out there and kind of fighting the fight for other people. So there are different kind of strands to that. But of course, alongside that, I have the kind of benefit of all my training as a therapist and the therapy that I do, that self-care is something I have learnt to do. And that, of course, kind of helps us with all the slings and arrows of life, but including the kind of all that comes with repeated pregnancy loss.
Did you name your babies?
I did. Babies, yes, I mean, I named them all, and my first babies were being a late miscarriage and happening on a labour ward in a hospital meant that the kind of protocols around my loss and their birth were different from my early miscarriage and my earlier miscarriages, because that's what happens. But, you know, there is this sort of medical division between early and late losses. So my first babies were cremated, and we buried their ashes, and we had a sort of funeral service with some close friends. So they were sort of publicly named, if you like, and they have a headstone. Our other babies, we didn't have that rite of passage because, in short, we didn't have bodies to bury. So we didn't have the same kind of rites of passage, and they were privately named. You know, this is something I explore in my book, that a golden thread that runs through my book is that I don't believe in a sort of gestational pecking order of grief. But the reality is that later losses involve more of a kind of bodily onslaught, and it's likelihood you will be in a hospital and with the support of a labour ward, and you will also have a body to dispose of and have a kind of ritually accepted, for want of a better word, but as a rite of passage that we know about. But with early losses, we're deprived of that, and it becomes kind of more difficult to complete the rituals. You know, of course, all those names are part of my family equally.
And do you remember them? Are they part of your life? Are they spoken of, or are they just personal to you?
Yes, but again, what's so kind of curious and interesting about this whole topic, and just sort of tease out in the themes of my book about the kind of liminal nature of miscarriage, is that with, again, going back to my first pregnancy that ended in my twins dying, we have footprints made, and I have photographs made, and so I it's really easy for me to remember them. And I have the footprints that are framed are in my kitchen, so they are very much a part of the fabric of my family, and people who come and visit and people come into my kitchen, they see the footprints and they see the names written under them. But of course, my other losses, I didn't have the privilege of those sort of incarnate memories, so they're more nebulous in the family, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But of course, that I remember them. And in case of the, all my miscarriages were very visceral, painful, emotionally and physically events. And they can be very, very alive in my mind, even now. And that can often be the case. You know, you remember the very fine details, the smells in the room, and the, you know, I can still remember the color of the cotton in the, button of my husband's shirt in, you know, one of my miscarriages. He held my hand, something I was fixating on. I, as a kind of mother of two sons now who are 10 and 17, have always been very, very open about my other pregnancies and their kind of would-be siblings, and we speak very openly about that, and have very open conversations, and they kind of puzzle around with that, you know, mum, it's interesting, Mum, I wouldn't be here if they would. Those sort of existential puzzles.
When you talk people through their kind of five stages of grief, what is considered normal, inverted commas, in those situations? And when should someone worry in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, I would begin to be concerned if somebody just, it's really getting in the way of functioning well in the world, and well not being sort of a high bar. But, you know, if you find that your quality of life is really being affected by your emotional responses still. So you're withdrawing from your friends and family. You're not being able to work effectively. You're kind of being very distracted by obsessional thoughts or incredibly low mood. If your mood is dipping such that, you know, you're not functioning in the way that you're used to functioning. These are all sort of warning signs. It's totally appropriate after a miscarriage or two or three or four to be bruised and battered and to take some time. But as I say, during that time of, and that time I'm sort of saying very loosely, I don't want to put a number of weeks or months to it, because it's so dependent on what you've been through.
So say if someone comes to you, how would you stop the negative coping strategies that's maybe been before that would creep in? Like for me, it was eating lots of Haribo, which I know seems really petty, but I did eat a lot of it, and which then damages my teeth, which it's like a vicious cycle.
In terms of if someone comes to me and they say, look, I've been trying this X, Y, Z and it ain't working, or it's, of course, it's entirely appropriate that you build up a network of support, and you, if all goes well, you have one or two or three people that you can turn to. I think in times of, in the wake of pregnancy loss, there are some people who get it and some people who don't. Mm-hmm. Isolating experiences, any kind of emotional upset is, it's in our heads and bodies, we're alone with it. So I spend a lot of time working with people around sort of self-care. So for you, Rachel, just plucking that concrete example of Haribo's,
yeah,
fair enough, you know, that's it's an easy quick fix. Glad it's Haribo's and not a glass of neat vodka, you know, we all yeah. turn to, or shopping or compulsive shopping or smoking weed or whatever it is, we all turn to things that are quick fixes to soothe the pain. But I've just said it, it's a quick fix. You know, you eat the Haribo and then your sugar shoots up and it shoots down, and you feel rubbish, and then you do it again and you feel terrible about yourself. So using that concrete example, it's about just pressing the pause button. You know, why am I reaching for the Haribo? Well, my guess is it's not because you're bored at work. It's because you're really, really in pain. And I use that word to cover lots of things. I imagine I'm not in your body, but the grief and the sadness and the envy and the guilt and the yearning and the. But if we can just learn to be with those feelings just a little bit more, we have to tolerate it bit by bit. That only if we can be with those feelings, then we can turn to ourselves with the compassion that we need. Just as the people, you know, that our good support network can do for us, we need, you know, we can, you know what it feels like when you talk to somebody who just makes you feel a bit better, you felt heard and acknowledged and mm-hmm. soothed. Well, we need to learn to do that for ourselves too, and we tend to avoid it, and especially when miscarriage is, in my experience, is quite often plagued with a sense of guilt and not liking ourselves and not liking our bodies and feeling self-critical. It makes it that much more difficult to turn to ourselves with that kindness and compassion that we actually need.
And I think that's the difficult thing. I know it was for me the I had people that would say to be kind, and I just didn't want to. I didn't like myself, and I definitely didn't like my body. So to be kind to at that situation, that's really, really tough.
It is, and it can get people really stuck. So what I would say to you then would be, well, okay, that's normal. You know, self-disgust, self-loathing, blaming yourself, that's all part and parcel of the response. It's a very normal and usual response. So somehow kind of decoupling that self-criticism from yourself, just seeing that self-loathing as a symptom in the same compartment as the sadness or the anger or anything else, to wriggle away from that self-critic, to see it for what it is, as a kind of, okay, well, so that you don't fuse with that self-critic, otherwise we get stuck. Mm. So I often use the kind of anchor of, well, hang on a minute, if your best mate had just miscarried and was eating lots of Haribos, would you be sat there on the sofa next to her saying, God, you're disgusting, look at you? Just as a sort of anchor, think about, why do I turn to myself in such a different way than I possibly would to anybody else that I cared about? Mm. And that can be quite stark. I kind of reminder, it's not the golden bullet. It's not going to necessarily change your behavior overnight, but it's a place to start, just beginning to think about how we turn to ourselves.
How do you get past the self-care with people that just think it's like airy-fairy and, you know, they should just, you know, toughen up and all the rest of it?
For me, I see self-care so different. It's actually, if you really want to dust yourself down and get on with it, you've got a much better chance of doing that if you really look after yourself. You can't dust yourself down till you kind of cleaned up the wound and put the plaster on or whatever it is. It's a trick to think that we just need to kind of forget it and get on with it, because it will come up and creep us from behind and bite us in the bum. I talk to a lot of people who feel it's quite self-indulgent to turn to themselves, but it's not about self-indulgence. Self-indulgence for me, how I understand it, and I don't meet it very often, is when someone says, oh, woe is me, I've had it so much worse than everybody else, you know, stop the clocks. And that's not what it's about. This is, again, using that analogy, if your friend was going through it, this is about, I'm no worse. I'm no better, no worse than any other human being. And I'm suffering, and I deserve, like every other human being does, to have some kind of care and attention so I can get back out in the world and be who you want to be. Think about the things that you know make yourself feel better. We do know, but having said that, there's all the obvious mental health care stuff, which is really important. Okay, fair enough, you might binge on Haribos, but as I say, you know, press the pause button. You need to be eating as well as you can. You need to be sleeping as well as you can. You need to be getting your 20 minutes exercise every single day. All the kind of basic stuff, tick, tick, tick.
Whilst I was looking around on Instagram reading some of the posts that people have been writing, I saw the page Living with Baby Loss. The writer Laura's story resonated with me. She had posted that she decided she may not try again. I was interested in her story and reached out. I found Laura is someone navigating this and also someone who's an accredited therapist in cognitive behavioural therapy, counselling and psychotherapy. Surely, if anyone would know how to find ways of managing mental health concerns, Laura will know.
My last miscarriage was during lockdown, first lockdown. And following that, I had kind of just decided that's it, we really can't do this anymore. For a number of reasons, really. I think mainly kind of emotionally for both of us. Just kind of, you know, the stress that it puts you through. I think also kind of concern for what we were kind of putting our daughter through. Because I've had hyperemesis in all of the pregnancies, it means that I'm pretty much bed bound if I'm not in hospital. So I can't work. I can't even have my daughter or my husband in the room with me because smells and movement and things trigger off my sickness. So it felt really unfair, you know, to kind of put my husband through all of that again and having to kind of, you know, financially pay for everything and kind of do everything practically. And then for my daughter as well, not to have, you know, her mum around. So that was some of the reasons. And then kind of physically, I felt it would be really unhealthy to keep kind of putting my body through it. Especially because of all the medication I have to take when I'm pregnant. And then also just kind of financially as well, in terms of, you know, we were paying for everything privately, which is really, really expensive. I wasn't then able to work, because I was unwell. And, you know, the impact kind of immediately financially on that and the stress that it brings, but also kind of the fact that then you miss out on, you know, other things like, you know, being able to go on holidays and not to be worrying about money and things such as that. So we had kind of decided that, you know, enough was enough. And during lockdown, unfortunately, we had to even pay to have the MVA, which is the removal of the baby, because after ringing around, I think, every NHS service in London and Essex, they weren't able to do the operation because of COVID. And actually, my local unit didn't even have a early pregnancy unit anymore. That had been turned into a COVID unit. So we spent a lot of money kind of on that operation, and the operation itself was quite traumatic because everyone was in kind of full PPE. So we'd kind of decided that was it, definitely kind of, you know, really can't do this again. I was trying to work really hard at kind of being okay with that. And part of that was starting an Instagram page, with the idea being that it was about, you know, showing that you can kind of be okay after loss, and that actually, you know, if it's not the life you expected, it can still be a good life. And it was meant to be kind of quite a positive place. And also a place for me to finally kind of share my story and talk openly about what happened. But with similar people that had been in a similar experience. It wasn't something that I'd kind of shared with kind of family and friends. And then within all of that, I then had a follow-up call with my doctor, as we had the results from the baby that we had tested. And they thought it was actually a partial molar pregnancy. And they thought that was the reason why I was so sick this time, even though I'd been on lots of medication for the hyperemesis. And he was quite confident about adding another medication, and that actually, that then, you know, he felt quite confident things would be okay. And much to my surprise, I started to get convinced again, even though I had said never again, about actually, was I really all right at, you know, not trying again. And actually, whilst we were being offered something new, which he was offering, you know, we kind of felt actually we really couldn't kind of give up at that point. So then the kind of Instagram changed to being instead about kind of, okay, well, maybe we should try again. And it kind of went from there, really, up to now. And now we're in the place where, you know, we are, trying again.
That is quite a journey to go from deciding no, as in point blank,
yeah,
to maybe. How does that feel?
Yeah, I was surprised because I was definitely no. And I was like, if I ever say that I want to, remind me of the hell that I'm going through. And I think, to be honest, if it had just been the miscarriages, that is horrific enough, but I would have kept trying. It was more the hyperemesis really that was putting me off. So I think the fact that they were adding something new in helped. Whereas I think if they weren't going to change anything, I wouldn't be able to try again, because I just would think, what's the point? Because nothing's different. And the baby came back that, it was chromosomally normal and there weren't any problems. So, there's something in my body that's doing something. I mean, the miscarriages, they've all been different. So I've had a range of kind of miscarriages, natural miscarriages, and I've had others kind of within context has made it kind of more difficult or kind of easier in some way. So I didn't know anybody. Well, I didn't think I knew anybody at the time because we didn't talk about it, that had been through it. So I thought a miscarriage is what happens on the TV, which is where, you have this pain and this sudden rush of blood and then it's all kind of over within half an hour and it's sad, but it's all kind of over. And actually, in reality, it was weeks and weeks of doctors not being sure if I was or not. And then when they were sure, it was, days or a week of kind of really bad pain and lots of bleeding. And I felt very embarrassed and shameful about it. So I didn't tell anybody. The third one was really, really difficult. So, that was the one I lost at nearly 14 weeks. So I found out I was pregnant, the same week actually that my sister passed away. Then had the 12 week scan, that was all fine. And then my mum actually came out to visit me and I was getting scanned every 2 weeks in Singapore because of my miscarriages. So I remember saying to my mum, oh, we'll come to a 14 week scan, it will cheer you up, you can see the baby. Was told that the baby didn't have a heartbeat anymore. I didn't even know what a miscarriage was, or that was a thing, and thought, I was safe. I'd had the 12-week scan. I hadn't had any bleeding. So that one was particularly difficult. And after that one, I actually started having panic attacks, which I've never really had anxiety before, certainly never had a panic attack. And ended up kind of, seeing a doctor in Singapore and had some medication and got referred for some grief counselling, and had to really, really work hard at kind of my mental health. So really focus on kind of self-care and, going out for gentle walks and, spending time with family and friends and was finally kind of open with people about that miscarriage and also other miscarriages as well, which was the turning point really, that really kind of helped to kind of have that support, although at the same time was my first experience of kind of, not everybody being supportive and not everyone saying the right thing. I had some private testing in Singapore, but then had some more testing privately through the NHS in the UK. So yeah, it's kind of been different in different ways. And I think at the moment it's more, now that we're trying again, it's more around kind of, being aware of kind of depression and trying to kind of really look after my self-care. And also kind of, obviously, if I'm lucky enough to get pregnant again, then the anxiety around, how I'd feel about that and not ever kind of feeling safe really when I'm pregnant.
Have you ever been able to enjoy one of your pregnancies?
Yeah, I think only my first one with my daughter, who's now six, although it was awful, to begin with and hyperemesis kind of took a lot away from it, I just had the naivety. I didn't know anybody. Well, I didn't know anybody that had spoken about miscarriages, obviously. And now that I've spoken about it myself, I've learned other people have come forward and said, oh, me too. Mm-hmm. But I was just very naive. I did have bleeding with my daughter at 6 weeks, but I never thought, there was anything wrong with that. And actually, the bleeding turned out to be fine. But I never kind of imagined that I would be someone that would have miscarriages, and certainly not recurrent miscarriages, and certainly not kind of, 6 years later, to still be here, no further on really in terms of having a second child. And then the more they happen, the more your anxiety, because the more you realize that all the things that can go wrong. And even now, you know, having a kind of more friends in the community of kind of baby loss and infertility, you know, as helpful as it is, it also opens your eyes to all the other things that can go wrong as well.
Yeah, I
remember having a panic attack for the first time, being like, "What on earth is this?" And then I just remember kind of just feeling so overwhelmed and, you know, struggling to breathe and then thinking I really can't catch my breath and really then panicking more. And my husband was kind of like, "What's going on? What are you doing?" And I couldn't even kind of talk to explain to him that I couldn't catch my breath. And I remember trying to kind of then go outside. But in Singapore, the air was really, really humid. And then that kind of made me panic more. I felt like I couldn't get any fresh air. And that kind of eventually, you know, calmed down on that episode. But then I had this fear of then having another panic attack, which then led to me, you know, having some medication for it to try and, you know, reduce the anxiety.
Why do you think that this area of grief is so difficult for people to approach?
A few reasons. I think if you haven't experienced it, I do think it is really hard to grasp how hard it is. And I think some of it is around not wanting to upset the other person, you know, naively thinking that's the right way of handling it. Mm-hmm. I think some of it is around, you know, our own difficulty in, you know, not knowing what the right thing to say is. And really the right thing to say would be, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm really sorry. How can I support you? But actually instead, I think, you know, we're a society that wants to kind of minimize grief and not talk about grief. And we want to fix things, I think. And, you know, it's something that can't really be fixed because, you know, it's really sad. You know, your baby died and, it, you know, it's really sad and it can't be fixed. And I think, you know, we struggle with that as a society. And I think almost, you know, for some people it is unimaginable. They can't imagine kind of going through that and how sad that must be. So they almost don't want to take themselves there by having that empathy for somebody else that's going through it. And I think the problem is that when people are going through it, you know, similar to me, when it first happened to me, you know, for some reason I had a lot of shame and I felt very embarrassed about it. And I felt that I'd done something wrong and it was something to be hidden. And it's only through, you know, talking about it more that you know, it's been great that me talking about it has helped other people and other people that I know talking about it has really helped me. You know, that really isn't the case, not to be embarrassed about. But, you know, even now, so for example, you know, I've got a separate Instagram account where I talk about it because if I've ever mentioned it on a personal Instagram, it, it's interesting to see people's reactions, you know, so I could post one thing where I'm out for dinner and you might get, you know, 50 likes and then you post, you know, a candle for Baby Loss Awareness Week and, you know, there's 3 likes. So I don't know what that is. It's whether it's people think that you're kind of, you know, looking for sympathy or it's an attention thing, you know, or if people just really don't know how to respond to it. I've never, ever been offered any mental health or emotional support or been told anything about that with any of the miscarriages, you know, which is really, really bad. But, you know, secondly, there is no follow-up, you know, when you've had a miscarriage, nobody rings you the following week to say, you know, how are you or physically what's going on or let's check or, you know, I just find that really strange because when you have a baby, you get all of that. You know, so why is it any different when you have a miscarriage? Because there's still physical things and emotional things that can go wrong.
This was such an emotive area of discussion. I decided to open it up to people on my Instagram feed asking what helped them with their mental health following a miscarriage. Here's some of those answers. Read by actors.
Allowing myself time out and acknowledging I was allowed to feel the way I did. I had lost a baby, and it was okay for me to grieve.
Being referred to see an antenatal psychologist has been invaluable. Not only have we been talking about my losses, she has normalized and explained a lot of the feelings. She has also been giving me useful strategies and habits to put in place to help combat anxiety or grief and improve my overall mental health.
8 months of therapy, quitting a stressful job 6 months later and starting over, just something new. I also am very vocal about my journey and that has 100% helped as well.
What helped my mental health after miscarriage? My dog, yoga, journaling, therapy, and creating a new daily routine.
Initially, nothing helped, and I didn't want help. Then I started doing self-healing, and seeking support from other healers. Energy healing and shamanism, womb healing, theta healing, self-hypnosis using rapid transformational therapy. I regularly meditate, and I introduce yoga at least 3 times a week. I've also been doing journaling that I've found very helpful.
Writing is something I've turned to help me process my grief. It helped with my mental health, I think, to get things out of my head and onto paper. This is pretty common. There's plenty of blogs and Instagram posts of people trying to find the words to explain how they're feeling. Lauren is someone who's taken it a step further, publishing 2 books, sharing her story of her losses. Lauren has had 4 miscarriages and after NHS tests has gone private before deciding whether to try again.
So I wrote the first book. That is a romance novel that talks about like struggling to conceive and marriage and then obviously having a miscarriage, and that's got quite a nice ending to it. And I wrote that one first, and then when I reread it myself, I realised how much I'd actually left out about the miscarriage. So I'd wrote a really nice love story with some sadness in it, and then I rewrote it, but just about marriage and miscarriage, which is a short book. It's only got about 40 pages, and that's literally about how, like, the first miscarriage, how I've dealt with things differently. The first miscarriage, I just thought, oh, it's just bad luck. It's just one of those things that happens. Mm. But by the second and third one, I definitely didn't feel like that anymore. You definitely got more of sort of a self-blame thing. It does go in a little bit about depression and a bit about PTSD, that dread of obviously when you go to the toilet and you dread seeing blood when you are pregnant.
Well, had you been a writer before your losses, or what led you down the path of writing?
Never really written anything before. I kept saying, everyone had said, you're right. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, no problem. And I was furloughed for a few weeks during the lockdown. It was actually shortly after I'd had my D&C. So my husband was at work and I was just sat in the house and he works long hours. And I just thought, I keep telling everyone I'm fine, but I'm not. And I can't tell anyone that I'm not because I don't want anybody's sympathy. It's not what I want. So I just wanted a way to express myself. So I just started writing, just writing things down. And then I'd write down a little bit every day about how I was feeling. And it, from day to day, it would change.
And then you said you've got some of your readings that you were happy to share.
Picked 2 out. So I picked one on a bad day and one on a good day to share. So this is the first one. It says, I don't know how to end this suffering. This pain so deep within my chest that I just want to scream. To the outside world, I'm no different, but I know I'll never be the same. I don't cry in public. I keep my feelings hidden. But when I'm alone, this anger hits me and I feel like I've been several rounds with Mike Tyson. I wonder if I deserve this pain. Did I do something so bad that I deserve to feel this way? This depression weighs me down so deep, I feel like I'm stuck in a hole too deep to get out of. The emptiness making me feel numb. The guilt I feel when I look in my husband's eyes and know it's my body from stopping him from becoming a father. I felt a mixture of emotions with each pregnancy loss, and each one tore my heart a little bit more. I loved you so much, but then you left me. I didn't even get the chance to hold you in my arms or see your beautiful face. I wish I could have met you, seen your face, even if just for one moment. I will always wonder who you would have been. Would I have been a good mother to you? I wonder now if the 4 of you are together somewhere in heaven. I want to see the good in the world, but how can I when it took you away from me? I want a baby more than anything, but having another baby won't take this pain away from me, from losing you. I will always love you. I will always be your mother and remember you. I know I'll hold a baby in my arms someday. I still have hope. When that day comes, I will tell them about each of you and this journey. And it was, I couldn't decide at first whether how much truth to put into the book. So I wrote down everything that was true first, and then I added in some bits to make it a little bit of a nicer story. So a little bit of romance and a little bit of like a happy ending, which obviously I haven't got that at the moment. So I almost put a bit of hope into the book. The second poem is, I'm a soldier of a war I knew nothing about. I was unprepared, young and naive. I'm an expert now. It's my fourth time on the front line. I thought it'd get easier with time, but it hasn't. I'm stronger now. When I feel weak, somehow I find the strength to keep going. I wasn't ready for this roller coaster I've been on, but I'm surviving it. I'm not alone. It's okay to have a silent pain that no one knows about. It's okay to share your grief. It's okay to feel the things that you do. Never give up. Fight and survive, for one day you will win the war. You are a strong warrior. So the two quite different poems, and it's just, they was written maybe 2 or 3 days apart. So it shows how different a couple of days can make. I also think after about 6 weeks after you've had a miscarriage, that's definitely when it starts to hit me. And I don't know if it's a hormone level change or what. That's definitely when I feel a bit more sad about things.
Mm. And how are you feeling now about it, knowing it's coming on Thursday for these tests and things?
I am a bit excited. But I'm trying to sort of rein that in. Cause I know on Thursday I'm having the test. He's going to speak to me and he's going to explain what the tests are and things like that. But I'm only having the test. I'm not going to know anything else on Thursday apart from having a consultant to talk to who specialises in miscarriage. I'm not really going to have any answers. So I'm trying to sort of rein that in for myself. And then on two weeks later, I get the results. So I think that'll be the day where it's obviously going to be, it's about 3 hours away, the clinic that I'm going to. So that'll be quite an anxious journey there. And I'm hoping that he may just give me some answers, or at least having someone even just to support you through your next pregnancy. So you, if you are anxious or worried, you've got someone who can ring and say, something's not right, or is this normal?
Mm. I think that's going to help.
Yeah. Even throughout this, I still believe that I will be able to have children. I think it's just going to be a long journey. And I may still have a few more losses along the way. But it was never something that I knew. I knew what miscarriage was, but it's never something I sort of related would happen to me, as awful as that sounds. So I think now, when I do have my own children, it will be something I will speak to them about, because I don't want them to feel like it's something that doesn't happen. Because it should be something we speak about. And I mean, not many of my family know about it, because nobody knows what to say to you. And I don't really think there is a right thing to say. There's a lot of wrong things to say. And I've had a lot of those, but I think it's more teaching them that these things happen, and it's okay to talk about them or not to talk about them. You can write about them, you can sing songs about them. There's lots of ways you can do it. I mean, I find I will do one thing a day to remember the babies that I've lost. So I'll either sing a song, or I'll write a poem, or look at the sky, or go for a walk and just think of what we may have been doing at this time. And that makes me feel like I've not forgot them, so that they did exist. Because I think a lot of the thing I find difficult is, to everybody else, they didn't exist.
If you've listened to episode 9 of this podcast, you'll know I used to practice mindfulness as a teenager. I found it comforting back then, and I'd thought it may be useful now. You'll also know I'm not religious, so I'm not seeking comfort in that respect. I think it's just the permission to be still with my own thoughts and feel okay about them. Again, though, I had no idea where to start, and so I had a bit of a snoop around and found an account on Instagram hosted by Vicky Wrens called Healing After Miscarriage. I reached out to have a chat with Vicky about her work as a transformational coach and healer.
Part of Oh My Mama Body has a miscarriage section called Healing After Miscarriage,
It's something that grew from my own story. So I had 5 miscarriages. I'm a mother of 7, so I have 5 angels, and I have 2 lovely boys here with me, Earthside. Now, I work nowadays as a mama coach to really help women to heal through miscarriage, giving them a guide and a direction out of the cycle of grief and a pathway forwards to feel strong and empowered again. Because I wanted that information to be available for, you know, other women to help them to get from that place of being worried and anxious to finding out the answers to their problems and then what they can do about it. And so I've got this now an A to Z. I had 50 symptoms all in all, and I was thinking, okay, I need to do something that other women can hear about it. And that's what led me to creating the website, Own My Mama Body, which is then an A to Z of what's going on with your body during pregnancy and postpartum, as well as really helping those women who have miscarried.
What made you connect it all and then want to publish?
So going through a multiple miscarriages took me on a pathway to learning to heal. Now, I'm one who I tried counselling and I just didn't get on with it. And that's my own personal way. And it took me more on the healing route. I've always been quite an intuitive person and loved healing, like, you know, healing with crystals, intuitive healing, healing with the hands, energy healing. There's so many different healing methods. Most people have heard of Reiki healing, for example. And I really wanted personally during my miscarriage experiences to understand why it was happening, what was wrong with my body. And I know it's, you know, that's one of the most common things with miscarriage. We ask what we've done wrong. We tend to blame ourselves. And I wanted that bigger picture because I thought there must be a reason behind this. It's not just my body, it might be something else. And so I went into different healing methods of really going into these methods. And so I got myself certified in so many different healing techniques and realized on my journey that going in and really connecting at a different level helps you get to a different level of understanding, a deeper understanding of what's going on. And it really helped me through my cycle of grief, connecting with my emotions. You know, we go through the cycle of feeling first shock, then anger, and you go through blaming yourself, feeling depressed, through to acceptance, and then moving on, but you quite easily going to fall back into the cycle and go through it again because things trigger you. And if you haven't really dealt with the core issues, you know, your anger, your frustrations, what's going on, then it's so easy to go round and round in the cycle or get stuck at one point. And that's where healing has really helped me personally to face my emotions and to accept and feel that self-worth and self-love again. And that's a huge transformation. And that's also what I'm helping other women with now, because I think all of us deserve to feel that self-love again after miscarriage. I think what hurts the most is not the physical side of the miscarriage, it's the mental side. It's also the words used by people around you. And I preferred to keep quiet because I was more worried about what other people were saying and how that was affecting me. People really want to say the right thing, but it doesn't come across when you've miscarried. And people want to say positive things to you, and they'll say things like, "Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant." Mm. Or maybe it was bad timing. And these kind of words really, really hurt.
Mm.
They really do. Yeah. So I kept to myself, I kept quiet, and it's a lonely time after miscarriage because you don't understand the world around you, you feel completely lost, you're wondering if it's something to do with you, you're blaming yourself, feeling guilty. It's a really, really hard time to go through. And that's where healing really, really helped me. And it's also what's driven me to really help other women because I can totally empathize with them and how they're feeling and really would like to help them get to that place where they feel whole again as well.
And is this what inspired you to start your community then?
For me, it was kind of like, it was like the messages that these babies were bringing me. They were saying, hey, Vicky, you know, you're not happy sitting in an office doing your office job. Have a look. Open your eyes. There's so much more that you could be doing. And so I turned this around and I created my website. I created a YouTube channel. And I have now written my first book, which is a book of poems around miscarriage. The poetry is something that comes from me, from deep within. And it's something that I really wish I'd have had when I was going through my miscarriages. Because like I said before, when people think they're saying positive words to you, it's actually the words that hurt the most. You know, ill thought through words, or even worse, complete silence from others. This book of poems is really connecting with deep empathy and compassion into how a woman who's miscarried, how you are feeling. And there's some beautiful illustrations in there as well that really give that compassion. And if others are feeling lost and they don't know what to say to a friend who's miscarried, to a family member who's miscarried, and this book of poems is the perfect gift for when words fail, that you can show that you do care. And it's much needed comfort for someone who has miscarried.
And the benefits of it for your mental health, how do you think it's helped with that?
Oh, in so many ways. So for example, like guided meditation, this is something else I've learned through healing, is that how important meditation is, and affirmations, gratitude, bringing all this into my life. Because on a bad day, you can wake up and feel perhaps like you don't want to get out of bed, that you can't face life. And I find that really simple techniques like meditation and writing down a few sentences about my day ahead, all of my strengths. I know it's a simple exercise, just 2 minutes long. These kind of things really help me, and that's what I've learned through healing, and that helps me get on every day to feel good.
People that are maybe new to the world of healing and things like guided meditation, and if they're skeptic or they're not too sure, what would you say to them?
I know that meditation and healing for some is a completely new area to go into. I can really speak from the benefits, from how it's benefited me, as in it's given me that new lease of life. It's given me that feeling of self-worth, self-love. And meditation is something that really helps you not only to relax, but to clear your mind. And it's actually proven with anxiety that meditation can really help. I was looking at statistics the other day around this, and so many are using meditation nowadays to help themselves feel calmer and better about themselves. And these affirmation statements and gratitude statements, it's not just glossing over and saying, hey, life is great. It's really putting that good feeling back inside yourself so that you give yourself that self-love. It's really deserve that.
Vicky has kindly recorded a special guided meditation that she's happy for me to share on the podcast. To keep things safe, in case you're listening to this somewhere where it's maybe not useful, helpful, or even a little bit dangerous, I've added it at the end of this episode if it's something you'd like to try or do. The meditation doesn't have any religious undertones. It's just there if you want to take the time for yourself, or if you need it. And on that, I completely get that seeking help or finding ways to talk is not easy. It has taken me ages to approach my grief and to share my story. And whilst I have on the episode 2 audio drama, I've also held a bit back to protect my own mental health and anxiety levels. I still have wobbles, and so I get it's not easy. And it's not anyone's fault. For me, this is a personal journey, and this podcast is helping. And so whatever your reasons for listening or joining me with it, thank you. This episode was recorded by me in my duvet den. The theme music is by Joe Chris. Thank you to Julia Bueno, Laura from Living With Baby Loss, Lauren from Recurrent Miscarriage Writer, and Vicky Renz from Oh My Mama Body. Thank you also to those of you who replied to my Instagram post and to the actors who read them for this episode. If you're going through it right now, there's links to help available on the website tryingagainpodcast.com. If you've liked this, please share it. And if you haven't already, put a rating or comment on your podcast app. It helps others find it. Remember to subscribe to this podcast so that you don't miss an episode. And if you want to join in or try out the special guided meditation from Vicky, that's up next.
Make yourself really comfortable. Close your eyes and feel yourself breathing gently in, gently out, gently in, gently out, gently in, gently out. Take your attention to your face. Feel your facial muscles relax. Your cheeks relax. The tension in your jaw relaxes. The back of your neck relaxes. Your shoulders drop gently as they relax. Your arms, your elbows, your wrists all feel relaxed, and your hands and fingers gently relax. Your body releases all tension as every area takes the time to relax. Your hips and leg joints relax. Your thigh muscles sink gently as they relax. Your knees untighten and relax. Your calf muscles drop gently and relax. Your ankle joints, your feet, your toes, all relax. Your body feels so calm and relax as you breathe gently in, gently out, gently in, gently out. Now visualize a golden circle of light 1 meter above your head, glowing radiantly, full of loving, positive energy. Feel yourself connect with this light, out from the top of your head. Feel the glowing, golden energy of this circle of light. Connect with the top of your head. The light flows down into your body, filling you with golden, sparkling energy. Feel this vibrant energy fill every space in your head, your nose, your ears, your neck, flowing into your shoulders, elbows,
down through into your fingertips, down your back, through your ribcage and stomach, down through your hips and thighs, travelling down to your lower legs, tips of your toes, feeling every nook and cranny filled with this warm, golden energy. Your body feels warm and radiant as it is filled with this wondrous energy. Breathe gently in, gently out, gently in, gently out. Gradually take your attention to your heart. Feel that golden light in your body, filling your heart with love. So much love. And open your heart to messages of positivity coming to you now. Allow these messages into your heart. I am loved. I am strong. I am caring. I am courageous. I am whole. I am worthy. I am fulfilled. Visualize these positive words floating around you. Visualize scooping them all up with your arms and bringing them into your heart, allowing them to become part of you, whilst giving yourself a big hug. Enjoy the feeling of this positivity. Allow all of these feelings to stay with you. You can connect with these feelings anytime. They are always there, filling you with love, calmness, positivity. Now take your attention to your body. You feel your breathing. Feel where you are sitting. Feel your body again. Giving your toes a wiggle. Your fingers a wiggle. You can move your shoulders up and down and stretch your arms. You are back, sitting, and can open your eyes, having a good stretch, feeling refreshed.